Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to TruthWorks Network, the Black Voice Collaborative on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Janice Graham. TruthWorks Network, speaking truth to power from the river, the rock, and the tree. Our Common Ground. Blog Talk Radio. I'm Janice Graham. Welcome to Our Common Ground here at Blog Talk Radio. We're so glad to have you here tonight at Our Common Ground. Every Saturday night, open mic. And thank you for being with us. We see that we've got people in our chat room. Our chat room is open. If you'd like to join us in chatting along during this broadcast, that we're going to be with you until midnight, and let me kind of give you a clue about what kind of day it's been. It's been a beautiful summer day here in New England, and we were around 68 degrees, and that gives us pause. And with me tonight here at Our Common Ground is Alpho. Alpho, how are you, my brother? I respect you, Hotep.
Good evening, Janice. I respect you. And welcome all the people in the chat and all of
listeners. Yeah. How are you?
I'm back
you sound
and forth.
A little
I'm in and out.
Tentative.
I'm up and down. Well, yeah. You know, situation here on the ground with me is instinctive.
We call that ground 1,000. Can't be
well,
a zero.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, because the more I do, the more they expect me to do. So I'm just here right now, and I'm trying to wade through my little problem here. But it's minor, but we'll be all right.
Yeah, you'll be all right. I think. Let's talk a little about what we're going to do tonight. Tonight we're going to be doing a couple of things. One of the things that I think that has been talked about over and over, and we can't talk about it enough, is how we are as a people and as individuals, inundated by alpha, just a bunch of stuff, who we ought to be, how we ought to think, what we ought to see, what we shouldn't see, who our president is, and who are the people who hate him because he's the president, and what the first lady wears, and what we should be buying and putting in our house, and what's the color of the day. And I want to talk about in this first half hour, what lies do we really buy, you know, and what is the difference between being sold a lie and buying a lie? And it really gets, and the reason I want to talk about this, Alpha, is because it really gets to the issue of how many lies have we bought, how many have been, what kinds are being sold to us, which ones do we buy, what do we have to give up, and what do we give in exchange for these lies, because it really gets, you know, it's something that we say, and you say it on your show, India repeats it over and over. Last week, Doc Don said something that I've been rattling around in my head, that I am the sheriff of me. And India always says that I am the CEO of me. And you in your shows with Wake Up by Teddy Prendergast, it's time to get started. But unless we sharpen our consciousness, and did you hear that fool coming up my hill on a motorcycle? Could you hear that noise? You see, every Saturday night they get stupid. But anyway, let me finish this thought, because I think we have to in order to endure the lies that you talk about, the lies that are manufactured for us to believe one thing, to disbelieve our seeing eyes or to have lying eyes, we have to sharpen our consciousness. And I don't think that many people out here who are listening to us accept things at face value, but there are too many of us in this day and age accepting things at face value. We assume the government and other people have our best interests at heart unless we really think about it. And, you know, we talk about this dumbing down, but how can this be when we're dumbed down, divided by means of societal segregation and manipulated? How can it be that we can take the time to really wake up, to sharpen our consciousness so that we are not so defeated by the lies that we do buy, or that we are fooled by the lies that we are sold? We, you know, we think that making ends meet has become the ultimate goal in our lives, making it impossible, I think. Black people don't spend enough time to reflect and ponder about our true spiritual identities. And those identities have been, Alpha, I think, the bridges that have brought us safely across. It's time for us to get educated and motivated, because, as I always say, we are the moral consciousness of this country. We're the only people capable of instilling positive change once and for all. It's not Barack Obama. Barack Obama sold us on our spirit of change, but he will not bring change. And it's really my hope that people will not take what is said as truth. And I posted something in the chat room that struck my brain. You know, we as a people, because of the journey that we have taken, I think, we're the batteries in a very dysfunctional, corrupt society. Why we do as a nation, as a world, accept the dumbing down, the lies that are told. And what I want our audience to do tonight is take a listen to something that I found that really encourages us. And we really want those of you who are listening to take a listen to this, because it really is time for us to wake up. And it's really, you know, if you ask yourself, what are our aspirations? To be like them, those who are warmongers, those who will lie in order to have political, which is really a monetary gain, They tell us that angry is bad. They tell us that we ought to give in, that we ought to walk into the lie and imitate the lie that they have told. They tell us that resistance is bad. They tell us that our eyes are lying on us, that are lying to us. They tell us that our history is lying to us. Let's take a listen to this.
A society will go through these cycles in which you have a little bit of good, a little bit of bad, a little bit of dark, a little bit of light. And yet the real work is about you taking care of your own house, your own garden. And if everybody did that, you know, unseen forces would come to aid. Man would, like Vernon Howard said, we can accept that God can become man to save man, but we can't accept that man can become God to save himself. It's one of the most powerful statements I've ever heard. And so what is that dependency in human beings that makes them refute that? But we know that everyone listening to the sound of my voice is going to refute that. No, it's Jesus who's meant to do it. Muhammad, Allah, what are you talking about? Oh, that's all that humanist stuff. Man being his own God. Oh, satanic evil. So we already know that, you know, that's not a common hell theory. But wait a minute. What then is the motive that makes people refute that statement? Before we get into what they're into, you're a Christian. Why would you feel motivated to not accept that man is his own savior? I'm very interested in that. I'm very interested in as to why you, not the cult, not the clan, not your guru, why you would, you know, have a problem with that. What's in your psychology that has made you in the 20 years of your life, or the 25 years of life, or the 40 years of your life, not have enough brain cells to realize, my God, that's the bottom line? Because in my opinion, if you don't accept that, you are an insane person. You're not insane, you're unsane. You're toxic, and you know you need to be quarantined or something. That's really the long and short of it, in my opinion. Then I want to get the crucifix out. As soon as I hear that somebody is, thinking that another authority, another person, has the rights over their mental and emotional and attitudinal and psychic life, I'm worried about that person. Because I know that person has got some very serious psychological and existential problems. Right off the bat. And then that person is going to be, a herd, part of some herd, or will be a controller of a herd, or will be manipulated by the herd, or whatever you want to call it. But that person is not going to end ever. You're never going to find that person, in it, doing good in the world, real necessary good at all. It's just a contradiction in terms. It's impossible. They may be sold the illusion or the delusion that they're doing wonderful work because they give to Live Aid or the next stupid charity that pops up out of the woodwork, They were there. Great, you were there, yeah. Well, we had Live Aid, didn't we? When was that, 1982 or something? Did the world get any better? No, all that happened is Bono and Geldof got on their best clothes one day and walked off down there to Buckingham Palace, got on their bony knees, and said, thank you, Mom, for their little award. Okay, that's what happened. And their kids will go to good schools, and they will have, million-dollar hotels, and they'll have the best time of it, because they're sellouts. The people who sold out or were already working for this cult of Dionysus, people's champions, in order to lead you away, just like in the Monty Python Meaning of Life. Follow Andre, the waiter. He's got something to show you, so you go up down some streets.
Over here.
Up some alleyways.
Come on.
Through a bunch of parks.
Stay by me, huh?
Take you on a 15-minute tour.
Nearly there now.
To show you something.
See that?
It leaves you up in an empty field.
Much of a philosophy, I know. Fuck you.
And then gets angry with you.
Fuck off.
You don't think it's very much.
Don't come following me.
Yeah. So keep on following Andre. That's what every guru, every priest, every politician is telling you. It's all tomorrow. Every scientist. You're going to have it tomorrow. You're going to have it tomorrow. You can't have it today. Because we don't live in the now. We live in tomorrow's world. Tomorrow doesn't even their own science proves it doesn't. Tomorrow doesn't exist, but they're going to tell you it all exists in tomorrow. So the fundamental line is: discover that there's a hidden hand, mind controlling the world, operating to keep you down. Understand that you are a participant in that because you are allowing those hooks into your flesh. I've said it many times, and I said it recently, said it last year. You must distinguish the difference between saying, "Have I been sold a lie?" And the difference between, yeah, but have I bought a lie? Because there's all the difference in the world attitudinally between those two statements. you are being sold a lie. But that's the perfect right of that salesman to sell you a lie. The universal force doesn't care about that. Universal force's judgment, you know, field is not really operating on that frequency at all. The judgment field, the whole spiritual ball of wax begins based on whether or not you bought that lie. That's where that's the clause, that's the nuance, that's the difference. It's a no different a rule than anything that applies when you're shopping downtown. I can't even think of how it would be different. You know, this person prefers Gucci over, you know, Versace. This person likes Levi's over Wrangler. They have the right to sell you whatever they feel like. They have the right to even believe what they feel like. You know, somebody likes cappuccino, somebody else likes what? Latte, mocha, right? Choice must be there. The decision is yours. But where the real moral component comes in is what you bought and what you put your energy into and what you gave in exchange for what you bought. And if man is not in inner harmony or tuned correctly, he's going to create chaotic noise. If a guitar isn't tuned properly, don't expect it to play well. It's going to be in discord and it will create chaotic sounds. So the bottom line comes in, but how are you tuned? How are you tuning your inner instrument, your consciousness? As I said, the alternative to that is to not tune it, but then hang out with a whole symphony of likewise untuned people, so you can all believe you're cool. In fact, you can say, no, this is a radical new form of avant-garde music we're playing here. It's real hip. It's real cool. All this chaos. In fact, this chaos is really true. This chaos is the ultimate form of music. But that's just you mind-controlling yourself into believing that your chaos is order. And unfortunately, there are very toxic people in the world who don't like order. They want chaos because they feel good in that chaos, and you're providing it for them. No human being who is in their center can be hypnotized. That's what needs to be remembered. No human being who is in their center, who is being guided, who is close to their intuition, who's a sharp critical apparatus, who's got a sharp sense of judgment, can ever be manipulated. Not for any permanent or lasting length of time. You know, they can be diluted temporarily perhaps, but you know, it's like a muscle you have to keep on working on, a muscle you have to keep on sharpening, like anything. And I really believe that a lot of the obstacles and challenges and you know, tragedies that are occurring in the world, that's what this is for. This is the grinder. This is the thing that's sharpening the blades of intelligent people. You know, you have to have friction. I'm sorry, it just happens. You can't sharpen an axe or a beautiful blade without that grinder, without that sharpening apparatus and the friction that's caused and the mechanics of that. So it's the same way with sharpening consciousness. You must have this whetstone of the world in order to sharpen your mind and sharpen your consciousness so that you come to see, you know, some of the meaning in all of this. And it's ultimately discovery of your own self. It's not about the discovery of society or other people. All of it is a discovery of who and what you are, ultimately.
Alpha, that's probably some of the wisest counsel that we can have around looking at the strengths that we bring to our own to our situation, to who we are in this society. We'll take your calls at 1-347-838-9852. You should write it down. You're listening to Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Graham, your host and my co-host tonight, and we are so pleased to have him with us again, is Alpha of the Alpha Show. What do you think about sharpening this notion of your consciousness and the chaos that gets created so that we buy into the lies that are sold? House Music in our chat room just brought up, Alpha, one of the most blatant, most recent issues, and that is making a national discourse out of the behavior of three people. the new Black Panther Party and how that whole loop. I had an interesting discussion with my mother today. Reverend Jeremiah Wright is going to be a speaker at a dinner that her church is giving in Florida. And for those of you who are in the Florida area, I know Aronde and House Music Lover and my good brother, dear brother, Carl, are down there in South Florida. Reverend Jeremiah Wright is going to be a keynote speaker at a dinner sponsored by the St. John's Missionary Baptist Church in Boynton Beach, if you're interested in hearing him. And my mother went to a meeting today. She is one of the leaders in her church. And there were some concerns that members had about having Reverend Wright as a speaker for the church. People were challenging the church leadership about whether he should be allowed to be there. And in a previous discussion, I had said to my mother, well, one of the things if people have that concern, the first question ought to be, what do you know about Reverend Wright, and do you know about his ministry, since this is a church activity and it's not a political activity? And she said that people were a little bit crazy. And that really brings me back to how people buy in this society, in this world, too many of us accepting things at face value because it was on the news or because a celebrity said it, then it must be true. It must be on the TV. You know, I'm a big fan of Battlestar Galactica, and I love some of the drama and some of the lessons that you can learn in there. But I also realize it's a damn TV show. Fox News is a damn TV show. What are you thinking, Alpha?
Well, Janice, my biggest problem with this entire scenario, this entire topic, is just the. We talk about, you know, the lies we accept, the lies we are susceptible to. But even more so, how about the propaganda and the agenda? Because the propaganda and the agenda have been successful. Just as you pointed out, half the church is simply bought the and drank the and swallowed instead of spitting out that Kool-Aid. And what they know about Reverend Wright is only what they've heard about Reverend Wright. That is why our media is such a powerful tool when it comes to perception and robbing you of that ability to think on your own without, contaminating the facts. And everybody has it on their own set of facts. That's what seems to be on everyone's agenda. Well, we'll simply say this, and we'll keep saying this regardless to what is said on the other side. And as a matter of fact, if you are debating someone in a pundit forum, you'll simply say what you want to say, talk over what they say, and laugh about it, and grin and chuckle.
You know, it's absolutely right, and that is why, you know, consciousness is a intentional way in which to both breed and grow your awareness and intelligence. But you first have to look at how you listen, how you read, and you have to also analyze where is this information coming from. And that's part of the dumbing out. We're not paying attention to where it's coming from, and that is why we have a full-fledged U.S. media that is moneyed by corporations, and it is a you're absolutely right. It's a propaganda program. It's a campaign to dumb down America, to sell them lies. But the real question is for every individual who's listening to this show is whether or not you buy the lie. You know, there's a difference between me trying to sell you something and you buying it. And I think that's where Ted Trimfront, who was a speaker in that piece, I think, and he is a philosopher, and I think that is where he is coming from. That, and then having a consciousness that prepares you for people being angry.
Well, I don't think that. I think when people get angry over a particular discussion, they seem to get angry because your lie has prevailed or your set of facts have prevailed. And when you begin to speak or when you begin to listen to someone's narrative on a topic, on a subject, on, you know, you have to, you know, really step back and look at what are the facts. Because if I'm saying one thing and they're saying another, and that's all you hear is back and forth, then the truth actually becomes foggy.
Well, you know,
it's a career.
But I think that the thing is that we can't think of it in one singular way, because a lot of this stuff is very subtle. It's almost invisible. It happens so regularly, and it happens, it's so continuous that we are not aware. And that is why it is so important for us to wake up and to sharpen our intelligence about how, where it is. First of all, we have to realize that it's existing. It's like I wrote in the chat room that the chaos that gets created is the fog to hide the lie, or the lies. You know, for instance, this whole notion of, oh, well, if you're not a patriot, if you don't love this country in the way that we say this country is, then you are not a very good patriot. You are not worthy of citizenship. That is a very subtle message that gets carried across in our society. And it's really directed at black people more times than not. And when we hear that message, rather than saying, I'm not buying that lie, what we do is we step back and we say, well, you know, I didn't really mean it that way. It's almost in the vein that what we were talking about on your show today about the apology. We apologize because our consciousness is not sharp enough for us to recognize that we're on the right side of the argument, that we're on the right side, and when we don't buy these lies. You know, there's a, I don't know, Alpha, you know, you and I talk about TV a lot, but there's a new show on one of the stations, I can't remember what it is, called Rubicon. And the theme of that show, as they advertise it, and it says, it's a show about a government agency that unravels messages, finds messages that are being passed back and forth, or government, not government secrets, but conspiracy. Conspiracy theories, and their job is to investigate whether a conspiracy is true or not. And conspiracies are being communicated in a lot of different ways through a lot of different people. It's really a CIA operation, and the name of the show is Rubicon. But the theme is every conspiracy is not just a theory, but one of the lies that we've been sold in this country is that if you talk about conspiracies, if you talk about a truth that hasn't been totally examined and accepted as part of the landscape, then something's wrong with it. It's bad. I mean, even if you think about something as simple but complex and complicated as even in our community, that children of, listen to this lie that we get sold. Children of that live in single parent households are less likely to be successful. But when you look at it, we know that almost 65% of the greatest black achievers in this country grew up, 65% grew up in single households. But
okay.
we get into this chaos rather than talking about and focusing on how do we support single family homes. We get into the contest, the pissing contest of why we are not like they are.
Okay. Now, when you say that 65% of the successful people in out of our community come from single family homes, one of my biggest approaches is pushback. And we don't just push back on this side. They are masters at pushback. And when you roll out a statistic like that, they'll simply say, well, we don't know about that statistic because we all know, or they'll enter into the discussion with little small phrases like, well, the truth of the matter is, or basically trying to, you know, debunk what you have just said. A fact. This is what they do. And when I speak so much about pushback, this is the effect that good pushback will have on a lie and the truth. Either
well,
way.
You know, it's not even Alpha that we try to argue the point. Too many times we just simply fold. Alpha, we've got to go to a break. Our number is 347-838-9852 if you'd like to join us in this conversation. When we come back, we're going to be talking about what kind of view did we get of our president on The View. I'm Janice Graham. This is Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio, and we will be right back.
Historically been a significant source of ideas and information in the black community.
That's right.
And that has dramatically changed. We're the owners and managers of black radio now, whether they be black or white, have a different agenda, it seems, and are no longer committed to providing news, music, information, ideas that would resonate with their audience. But instead, the stations are being programmed to be attractive to media buyers, not to the audience. And so it has created a very different kind of reality with broadcasting.
That the ice cream scoop can make a child smile, and that by slowing us down, the traffic light can keep us going. You know that the lawnmower makes life easier, that the blood bank makes life possible. But did you know all these ideas came from the minds of African Americans? Support the United Negro College Fund, because a mind is a terrible thing to waste. Visit uncf.org or call 1-800-332-UNCF. Brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
Against the people's lawful selection, our question, what if the Tea Party was black, holding guns like the Black Panther Party was back? If Al was Rush Limbaugh and Jesse was Sean Hannity and Tavis was Glenn Beck, would you harm their families? If Sarah Palin was suddenly just a soldier, would you leave it to the voters to go and get the soldiers? Y'all know if the Tea Party was black, the government would have been had the army attack. What if black people went on Facebook and made a page that for the death of the president-elect we pray? Would the creators be tased and thrown in the cage? We know the page wouldn't have been displayed all these days. What if Jeremiah Wright said that everybody white wasn't a real American? Would you feel scared of him if he had a militia with pictures that depict the president and Hitler? They would kill and bury that. Wait, what if Cynthia McKinney lamented the winning of the new president and hinted he wasn't really a true resident with no proof for evidence? Would the media treat it like a huge press event? They would have attacked whatever group she represents. They would have called a recruit for unprecedented in any network that gave a due preference would be the laughing stock of the news. So our question is, what if the Tea Party was black, holding guns like the Black Panther Party was back? If Al was Rush Limbaugh and Jesse was Sean Hannity and Tavis was Glenn Beck, would you harm their families? If Sarah Palin was suddenly just a soldier, would you leave it to the voters and go and get the soldiers? Y'all know if the Tea Party was black, the government would have been had the army attack.
Are afraid to stand up because they are convinced that they will be standing by themselves. But as Paul Wilson pointed out, you might have to just stand by yourself.
They're shooting black folks in the back, cops shooting them. Shoot a 92-year-old grandmother, and y'all didn't get outraged. And if she had a grandchild over there in Iraq, that nigga would come home for the funeral, then come back killing somebody he gave you.
One of the things that I started
be, in too many ways, essentially a nation of cowards.
This is Janice Graham of Our Common Ground, proud to bring to you a new Black Voice Collaborative, TruthWorks Network, at Blog Talk Radio. Look for us in August 2010. I'm Janice Graham. At TruthWorks Network, we'll be listening for you.
And we thank you for being with us here at Our Common Ground. Our call-in number is 347-838-9852, and I am pleased to be joined tonight once again with Alpha of the Alpha Show, and we have been talking about the need to sharpen our consciousness and really examine the notion of what lies we buy, what lies we're sold, and essentially, what we give in exchange. We're going to switch off Alpha, and we're going to talk about our president. Did you get a chance? Did any of you get a chance to see the president on The View on Thursday of this past week? He was chopping it up with Barbara Walters and Whoopi Goldberg and whoever those other people are, Elizabeth somebody and the other lady and the other lady. Did you see it, Alpha?
Well, I didn't see it in its entirety, but I did happen to see some of the excerpts as the media played them up as, you know, you've gotten calls for how dare he go on The View. He's belittling The Office. When didn't George Bush go on Dr. Phil, and weren't there prior presidents that were on particular talk shows mourning? And I mean, it's
the,
so
the
ridiculous.
Idea that the president is on a national, I mean, The View is very much like the going on the Oprah show. And I don't think that there is a politician in the world who would turn down going on Oprah. But let's listen to what Jon Stewart had to say about it.
So why is The View somehow beneath the office of the presidency that allows the president to speak directly to a particular cross-section of the American people? So as you can imagine, the press threw a fit.
I don't think it looked very presidential.
It's a move that some are calling inappropriate.
It's telling that he goes to cry on the shoulders of the sympathetic women of The View.
Whatever happened to the majesty of the office?
I think there's got to be a little bit of dignity to the presidency.
He waited until Star Jones left the show. What more do you want from the guy? And by the way, did you idiots have any short-term memory at all? Is this ringing a bell for you?
Were y'all spankers? Did you spank him?
Not really. Very often.
Not really.
We have too much dignity to spank it. Or maybe how about this?
And I've had plenty of practice of...
Yes, sir, right? Oh, you got one?
What happened? Man, broke the line. Broke the line.
All dignity. Or maybe you remember him from this very special episode of Fear Factor. All right, I'm not sure about the last one. I don't... Although in the president's defense, it's hard to look cool eating bull... So why is The View somehow beneath the office of the presidency?
There are some shows I wouldn't put them on Jerry Springer either, right?
Or Real Sex or Taxicab Confessions. Cougartown's a maybe. All right, well, let's see how the undignified, Springer-esque, unserious, unworthy ladies of The View tarnished the president.
Are you frustrated that this country still feels so divided?
Why don't you say, I'm not a black president, I'm biracial?
The health care.
Shirley Sherrod.
Responding to BP.
$59 billion for the war.
You had promised that the stimulus bill would cap unemployment at 8%.
Jerry. You know what? I bet the whole thing's a setup so Michelle can tell Obama she's cheating on him with his best friend. I guess our very serious media is upset that the president is ignoring his other very important duties.
It's the 100-year anniversary of the Boy Scouts, but instead of honoring the future leaders of our country, President Obama sat down with the ladies of The View.
The president, who serves as honorary president of the Boy Scouts of America, had been invited to speak.
Snubbing the Boy Scouts, what do you think?
The Boy Scout Jamboree that only happens every 5 years.
How can 45,000 Boy Scouts compete with foie gras and Whoopi Goldberg?
I feel sorry for the Boy Scouts, because they would have loved to have seen their president.
Okay, two things. A... Nothing Obama does will ever make you happy, will it? Nothing. Let's say Obama had reversed his decision. There's nothing the guy can do. Let's say he reversed his decision. I'm sure that would have been a problem. This president passes on an open forum to discuss issues important to women on national television in order to stand in a field rallying his adoring uniformed youth. I wonder who else would have made that choice. Punditry is easy. And B, look on the bright side. Boy Scouts will finally get their merit badge for crushing disappointment. Look, I'll bet these kids don't even care. I've actually got a friend who's a Boy Scout. Let's ask him.
I wear a neckerchief and collect merit badges for three years, and that asshole president doesn't even show up? This is bull. Nothing can make up for, ooh, a dog.
Did I say ten? Did I say friend? Sorry, he's not my friend, he's my pot dealer. Look, by the way, so why is The View somehow beneath
the office of the presidency.
Alpha, I think that's a very good question, and we would really be, you know, it underscores the need for the other side, whatever the other side is, to criticize this president out of a fear of the black president. It really does underscore exactly what this is all about. You know, I think, you know, it gets back to our initial discussion about consciousness. It is clear to me, and I don't know how you feel about this, Alpha, that all of the controversies that have come up is part of, as Twee 1968 is saying in our chat room, that this is all about the masters of deception. You have American commerce and business who are laying people off, not raising wages, not hiring, refusing to hire, refusing to grow out of the fear of a black president, and they are strangling our economy and keeping people out of work, sitting on billions of dollars in profits so that they can strangle this president and get the Republicans back into office. Now, that's how I see it.
And he's allowing it. He's sitting and he's actually allowing this to happen, as he allows everything else to happen because of the fear of his critics. They're not sitting on billions.
But the thing is, Alpha, I have to stop you, because we lay everything at the feet of this man. And what I am saying is that we buy into the lie. And how do we do that? I mean, you're my brother. If I were in trouble and people were saying lies about me, I would absolutely expect that you would have my back. And this president, and I kept saying it, I said it the night that he was elected, he is not going to do anything other than what other presidents do, other politicians do, unless we have our back, and that is going to require that thousands of us show up at the steps of the Congress, that thousands of us show up and demand what we need in this country, and have the people who peddle the lies know that we know, and we say it loud and clear: you are a liar. That is how we develop our own political consciousness. And until that happens, until we wake up, until we sharpen our consciousness, until we stop buying the lies that they are sold and putting on our own marketing campaign, this one man cannot fight this power. These are billions of dollars in revenues and profits that corporations are sitting on. And they're sitting on it, and they're keeping people out of work. They're keeping our economy from struggling through the little tiny black hole so that we can come out of this recession, so that the Republicans can get back into the White House. That is the bottom line. And I don't blame Obama for that. I blame the citizens of the United States who have refused to resist, and when you refuse to resist, it means that you fold into the lie.
Okay. You stop me. And I listen. Everything you have said, I have said too. What I mean when I say he has allowed it, he has allowed over 180 of his nominees to be blocked. When you see the people that he is nominating, the holds that are being placed on them needlessly. If George W. Bush recessed appointed 175 nominees, what's wrong? What is he afraid of? Why doesn't he recess appoint everyone he has nominated that has been held up? They are putting nonsensical holds on his nominees, and then when they finally release them, they are being voted on 100. They're getting unanimous support after they release them, after they give something up.
But it is not the responsibility of the president to raise hell about our interests.
Okay, but
Let me ask the audience something. We say that we are conscious black people. We say that we want to resist. We say that we want change. We say that we want the justice that we have been denied. How many people, how many of you, and you know you're going to lie about it, how many of you have written to, called your congressperson, called your senator? I called Scott Brown's office the other day, and I excused myself and apologized, and I said, but this is the message you must deliver to my senator. This is the message to him. It is not to you. This is the message you must deliver to my senator. And you can tell him that when I go to Washington, D.C. for the March on Washington on August 28th, that I am not following Reverend Al Sharpton. I am following my own consciousness about how we have are failing as a nation. Now, you know, but the thing is that we expect him at some level to self-destruct. If he self-destructs, then what?
Janice, the only thing I have called for this president to do is to stand and fight. You are absolutely right when you speak about the response of the people. And there should be thousands on the steps, and there should be thousands marching in the street. But it ain't happening. It's not going to happen. The liberal progressives in this nation do not have that mindset of marching. And as you have pointed out, the students don't dare march because they will lose their scholarships if arrested, or if they come in conflict with any kind of charges. They lose their scholarships, and that was a direct procedure, or that was by design, because that keeps them out of the streets over wars. That keeps them from marching for injustice. My criticism from day one with this president has been his inability or his unwillingness to push back. He's not confrontational, but when it came to the health care bill, the deals he was cutting and all of that and all that minutia, my biggest problem was he never had single payer on the table. He allowed them to set the table. He is devoid of surrogates. There are no people out there speaking on his behalf. And here's a case in point. This past week, when they killed this jobs bill and this and the whole nine yards, each one of those Democratic congressmen, all those Democratic senators, should have rushed the microphones for the next 2 to 3 days and basically dropped it in the laps of the Republicans. And that did not happen. You have case after case, time after time, where this president has had an opportunity to send out, not him, because you don't want him down in the mud fighting with idiots like Boehner and Mitch McConnell. I pointed this out. John Boehner, Mitch McConnell, they're in front of a camera, in front of a microphone, 5 to 10 times a week. Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid are in front of a camera maybe once a month. And they are the recipients of constant bashing. The president is a recipient of constant bashing. And where are the Durbins, the Schumers, the Feingolds? You know, Feingold is in a tough race in Wisconsin, I believe. But you haven't heard a peep from him. You haven't heard him utter a word about the filibuster, the large amount of filibuster. You know, these Democrats are the biggest cowards going. And I say that as a Democrat because what you see that is going on here is just the malfeasance of carrying a message. They can't carry a message to save their life. And that's what I criticize this president for, Tim Kaine and Van Hollen. This is not about the president will do what the president has to do. He will govern as much as he can. These watered-down bills that he got of health care, banking reform, this president has done quite a bit. But what do you hear? What do you hear them say? This president, he's done nothing. Name one thing he's done. Well, Wall Street reform. Okay? Health care reform. Stimulus package, which gave the largest tax cut to middle-class America and gave a historic investment in infrastructure and energy. Credit card reform. Student loan reform. Lilly Ledbetter Act. Nuclear agreements and disarmament. Well, of course, it's a Nobel Peace Prize, but he didn't have anything to do with that. They voted for him. Economic growth. Now, putting...
I'm going to stop you again, Alpha.
Okay, I'm going to stop you again.
I'm going to stop you again because, you know what? These are all our fights. Every one of the issues that you just laid out, those are our fights. And how many of us have gotten down into the dig and dirty to fight those fights on our behalf? And that's exactly my point about how we have begun to think that it's somebody else's thing. It's not Obama's thing. If we had begun to resist the kind of corporatism that has just simply tainted our politics and our public policy in this country, and if we had stood our ground from the very beginning when I'll give you an example, during the campaign. We were afraid to call Hillary Clinton a racist. I mean, I have a clip. Let me play this for a minute. We were afraid to call out the racist behavior of Hillary Clinton even during the campaign. Listen to this.
For racially charged comments she's made to the press to press her case for staying in the contest. In an interview with USA Today, Clinton said she would be the stronger candidate because she appealed to more voters. Clinton cited an Associated Press article that discussed, in her words, quote, how Senator Obama's support among working, hardworking Americans, white Americans, is weakening again, and how whites in both states who had not completed college were supporting me. There's a pattern emerging here, she said. Clinton was in West Virginia Thursday, the next primary state.
You see what I'm saying? We didn't call her out. We were afraid to call her out on that and a number of things. When the Jeremiah Wright thing came out, we were outraged, but we did nothing. So he did, as a politician, have to throw Jeremiah Wright under the bus because we bought those lies. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. We were talking about For those of you who are just joining us, the president's appearance on the network program The View, and we listened to a clip from Jon Stewart. But, you know, they will make a controversy out of whatever they'll make a controversy. But I have a problem with something that he said, Alfo, while he was on the show. When asked about his background, which included a black father and white mother, Obama said of African Americans, and he really wasn't, it gets confusing because he couldn't be saying it of African Americans. I think he was saying it of African Americans who are biracial. We are sort of a mongrel people. I mean, we're all kinds of mixed up. That's actually true of white people as well, but we just know more about it. Oh, Mr. President, the things you say when you're not reading canned speeches off of a screen in front of you. You know, really, his first go-to description of blacks is that they're members of a mongrel race. That sounds an awful lot. It came from the mouth of a former Klan recruiter and Democratic leader. Who could forget that our president utilized former Klansmen as a voice of principle and reason? So if you take all of that into context and you say Barack Obama's black cultural reality is defined by the names he might have been called in school, for all we know, even at home, such as mongrel and mutt. I was really taken aback to this. How insulated from black America has Barack Obama been to think that mongrel is a complimentary thing to call anyone? You know, when I heard this, and someone said, told me this, who had watched the show, my first reaction was, he obviously has never read J.A. Rogers' book, Nature Knows No Color. But let's listen to our president as he defines, as he says this. I mean, I had to go find this because, hello, what in the world was he thinking, and where does that stuff come from?
Do not describe yourself as a black president, but that's the way you're described. Your mother was white.
Mm-hmm.
Why would it be helpful, or why don't you say, I'm not a black president, I'm biracial?
Well, you know, when I was young and going through the identity crises that any teenager goes through, I wrote a whole book about this.
Yes.
Part of what I realized was that if the world saw me as African American, then that wasn't something that I needed to run away from. That's something that I could go ahead and embrace. And the interesting thing about the African American experience in this country is that we are sort of a mongrel people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're all kind of mixed up.
Yeah.
And now, that's actually true for white America as well,
yeah.
But we just
yeah.
know more about it.
Yeah.
And so I'm less interested in how we label ourselves. I'm more interested in how we treat each other. And if we're treating each other right, then I can be African American, I can be multiracial, I can be you name it. What matters is, am I showing people respect? Am I caring for one for other people?
It really does lead to the question, Alfo, how insulated from black America has Barack Obama been? And we'd like to hear your response to the president's comments on The View, at 347-838-9852. You're listening to Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Graham, and my co-host tonight is Alpho. Alpho, did you hear that?
Yes, I heard that. And I'll say this. Sometimes he gets into this this philosophical mindset, or this he speaks way above the listening audience's head. And if you look up mongrel, it's of mixed breed or kind, of mixed origin. And it also states that it's of language or word, an animal of mixed breed or kind. So in the
Alpho, come on, get the hell away from here. I don't give a damn what Webster had to say about it, Alpha.
Okay,
I don't care about there's nobody in this audience who believes that you talk about people in terms of mongrels.
I'm not saying that. I am not saying that. As I said, he begins to talk over the heads of the listening audience. And it wasn't up there. Yes, it was a bad choice of words, but the word itself was very applicable, but he should have stated it in a different way. I'm not saying he was right about it. I am saying it exactly. That's exactly what the definition of the word is. He should have found a better word. But,
You know, the thing is, here's a man who we are asking to lead the national discourse on race in this country because we believe that he has the intelligence and the insight. And he goes on national TV and refers to African Americans as mongrels. You know, if somebody came up to me and said, gee, you got Spanish-looking hair and green eyes, you are a real mongrel, I would be cussing until it didn't stop. And you know damn well, you know, and Steins in our chat room is saying, yeah, a number of times he has referred to himself as a mutt. And I'm wondering if while he was growing up in Hawaii, being reared by some white people and being treated as though he was an anomaly, if he was subjected to the kind of language and the kind of timbre in his thinking about race as this might lead us to believe. Now, Smooth Operator in our chat room is asking, what qualifies a race moderator? I think you have to have a special kind of historical cultural mix to understand both the language that you use in talking about race. I mean, this is a man who says that he doesn't want to drive up the dust on the issue of race, but he goes on national TV and refers to African Americans as mongrels, a very derogatory term. And I think that, as Smooth Operator is asking asking the question, what would qualify him? Because I have posted that the question, is he qualified to guide the national discussion on race? In his performance on The View, I would say not. Our number at Our Common Ground is 347-838-9852. If you would like to join us in this discussion, we would welcome your comments, your observations in regard to these topics. And Alpha, I know you're trying to trying to assess it, but you and I both know that the people who listen to him say that don't have the ability to analyze and assess it based on would you mongrel of a mixed breed or kind of mixed origin. That's not what they're thinking.
Well,
you and I both know that we think of mongrels as not pure.
Well, I look at it, like I said. Like I said before, I was stopped again. Before I was stopped again for the umpteenth time tonight, I said it just like that. I believe this man gets to a point where he begins to talk over or talk above his audience. And I don't think he meant it to be a derogatory term, but I don't think he knew that people would take it. I'm talking about people of color, people in the African-American community. I don't believe that he thought that they would take it in that derogatory way, which tells you another something about him.
Well,
he
you know,
not.
The thing is, when I heard it.
Permission to freak out.
I needed permission to freak out.
Well, I didn't look at it like that. I look at it as when I heard that he said it, I flinched.
Okay, you
I flinched because I knew that
he should have flinched.
Well, he doesn't have, like you said, he doesn't have the same experience.
That's what I'm talking about. I am required. You know, one of the things that I always say to my bosses at work is, you know, I try not to get too worked up about things, but when I get offended, I get offended. And I agree with a lot of people that the mutt-mongrel comparison completely puzzled me and why he thought mongrel was a good or even acceptable word to use. The other thing that really gets me is that actually true of white people as well, but we just know more about it, comment. You know, I just was dumbfounded, and we've got to take a break, and when we come back, we'll take your calls at 347-838-9852. Later on, we're going to be talking about going back to the charade effect, bullying and racial harassment in work. You think so? I think so, because I think that we haven't had enough chance to really talk about what the real lessons might have been about Shirley Charade. We'll be right back. You're listening to Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio. Write it down. Come talk with me and with Alpho and with all the people who are listening and share your views. 347-838-9852. This is Our Common Ground Saturday night open mic.
Van Jones, Acorn, the new Black Panther Party, and Shirley Charade. What's the same about these four stories? Not targeting black people, but targeting white people. Targeting white people, white voters or white would-be voters, to feel afraid of black people. To feel afraid of African-American people as if they are not fellow Americans, but rather a threat to what white people have. They're coming for you. They're coming for you.
Horror and moral terror are your friends.
They're coming, they're for coming you. For
they're
you.
Coming,
they're
for
coming
you.
For they're
you.
Coming, they're
for
coming
you.
For they're coming, they're coming you.
Wake up the entire African American community to the hidden issue of mental health.
It showed up in my life through one of my best friends, and we've been friends for over 30 years.
One story at a time.
If we would have known earlier, you know, we would have been much more supportive with her.
Once I reached out to my sister, it got a little better. Once I told my mother, it got a little better. The more I talked about it,
I felt it coming off.
The healing is in me, and the healing in a journey can also be extended to others.
It's our community and our mental health.
Giving voice to what you're feeling is part of the healing. If you're strong enough to just open your mouth, that's all it takes.
And the most revolutionary and healing thing that Black people can do right now is to love one another.
It's time to share ourselves. Healing starts with us. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and the Stay Strong Foundation.
You're listening to Truth Works Network, the Alpha Show.
You can catch me on True Works Network on 5 p.m. Eastern Time.
And we do want to remind you that you can catch the Alpha Show on Blog Talk Radio every Saturday afternoon at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and then more Alpha at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on TruthWorks Network. And we are pleased to have you with us tonight. How are things? How's the new, all you folks out there that are True Blood fans and... I can't wait tomorrow for Rubicon. Alpha, I used to be a person that never watched TV. I'd watch the PBS News, and that was the end of that. And now, even though in our house the TV doesn't go on until 6 o'clock, and I watch MSNBC news and commentary shows until 11, but I have my shows. I got hooked on TV by virtue of watching The Corner, and I went, wow, TV really does have something to offer. And then I went into The Wire, and once I got into The Wire, somebody told me about The Sopranos, and I started watching The Sopranos, and then it just goes on and on and on. I was a big fan of Battlestar Galactica, thanks to Brian, who's a member of our community, who introduced me to that. And I watched all six seasons of Battlestar Galactica in a week. That's a lot of TV watching. And you know I always call you and try to get you onto one of my shows. I've been trying to get you hooked into Breaking Bad. Our number here at Our Common Ground is 347-838-9852. And... we are glad to have you on our Saturday night open mic. We're going to be here every Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Time until midnight, and hope that you will join in to the discussion. Again, our number is 347-838-9852. Alpha, see, you're just... you know, you're just taking over the conversation. You're giving all the answers. And if you give all the answers, people won't have to call us to give us any more answers.
Well, I figure I better give some. I better start giving some answers because, like I posted, I wasn't offended. Just Sam. His choice of words were unfortunate.
Yeah, but, you know, this is a man who knows he has to be careful.
Well, he ain't been careful in a lot of things that he's done. I look at it like this.
He's the damn president of the most, was an image of the most powerful country in the world. He's a peace prize man. How can he get on TV and call me a mongrel?
Well, I don't think he was calling you a mongrel.
Well, what the hell was he doing, Alpha?
I think he was making reference to the different ethnicities.
You don't have to make me play that clip again.
Well, no, you don't have to play it. Oh, wait a minute. Before I start it, you going to stop me again? I just want to know before you start it now, because if you do, I can just mumble before you stop me. I am simply saying this. This is not his first verbal misstep, and it won't be his last.
But it's not the first time that he has done it.
That's what I just said. This is not his first.
I don't hear him calling some of them idiots in the Congress who try to stop his programs and spend their whole evening while I'm watching Breaking Bad. They're sitting down trying to figure out how they can lie about him.
Well,
I don't hear them calling them mixed up.
Well, he won't call them out on their lies either. Like I said, he is not the fighter that I would prefer. Now, when he speaks like that and people are outraged, I understand.
I'm going to stop you again.
That's all I ask you to do is let me know before you stop me. Because, you see, right now, I'm kind of feeling like now.
But Alpha, you know, he would never refer to the original peoples of America. Some people call them American Indians, who also are of European descent, American Indian Euro Mutt. You know, I have a friend who happens to be original people, and his mother is white, and there were people who called him an American Indian Euro Mutt. But mongrel is one of those words so loaded with negative connotations that it doesn't work as anything but an insult. And I'm certainly not the only one. Bad dogs are mongrel, good ones are mutts. It's sort of baked into the language and culture of America. It's definitely high-charged. It's a high-charged word to anyone who has studied racism in America or the civil rights movement.
Is it my turn? I am saying this. I do not disagree with what you are saying. But, however, I guess I wasn't as offended. Like I said, matter of fact, when you played it, that's the first time I heard it. Live.
Okay, well,
I mean,
you know what? I'm going to email it to you so you can play it over and over and over so you can get as offended. This man studied English at Columbia University.
And he's a
worked with black people.
And he's a constitutional law professor, and he's, his credentials notwithstanding, that is not his experience in the black community.
Let's find out what six, seven. Oh, don't even get me started talking about his experience in the black community. Let's see what 678 has to say. 678, you're on the air. I respect you, Hotep. Who are you?
I go by the name of O'Henry.
O'Henry from ATL.
He needs a job first. He needs a job. Come on. Hey, O'Henry, how are you?
I'm fine, Alpha. How are you?
All right.
I'm glad you guys are on. I missed you the first couple of weeks, but
we're glad to have you with us.
Yeah, I came in. I was thinking it may only be an hour show, so I was going to get in for the last 10 minutes, but I'm glad you all are
well,
on.
Well, actually, O'Henry, one of the reasons we come to our common ground for actually what is a Truth Works, what was planned to be a Truth Works broadcast, is because we can get the 2 hours in.
Cool. I enjoyed that. Jess, I'm kind of in the Alpha camp on this. I think the president should have chosen much better words in his description, but it didn't offend me per se. Not to the level of other things that people may have said or done. There are a couple of factors in that. I think one of the things is President Obama looks like you and I, but he's not like us. When I say that, I mean, of course, his life experience is different, being, you know, of mixed heritage.
Well, that's my point. That's my point, O. Henry.
So, you know, he is also, as an educated person, and I mean, you're educated, Alpha's educated, we all have education in some sense. I don't just mean it, you know, from a book standpoint, but I think when I speak of him, I think of, from a book standpoint, he's very intelligent, and he is as well as a go up in individuals' heads a lot of times. You fully understood it. I think most people, when they hear that word, mongrel or mutt, the first thing they think of is a dog. And that's not what came to your mind. Your mind came, went along the lines of the racial connotations of the use of that term as an insult to us as black people. The other thing that comes into play is, Dennis, you grew up in Florida. I grew up in South Carolina. He grew up in Kansas and Hawaii, so I just don't think it, you know, he's heard the N-word enough thrown at him.
Okay, but O. Henry, do we not expect?
I think a better angle on that for him to put was, first of all, when they asked him how he identified, I've always heard whatever color you were when the police pulled you over or what they wrote on that ticket is what race you are. To the overwhelming majority of Americans, he's just a black guy. They don't think he was a biracial person. And maybe he should have clarified that more, because he's used that term much to describe himself before. And that came up on another show earlier this week, and, you know, him using the term mud, and to describe himself as one thing and to describe African-Americans in this country is a little different. But I don't think he meant anything negative by it, but he certainly could have chosen a better term. I don't know whether.
Well, you know, the thing is that I'm wondering if a person who the president of the United States, well educated, thinking, I mean, he is a brilliant man. If, in fact, this hasn't been part of, it's so inculcated in how he thinks about it, that it's natural for him to say these things. You know, for instance, when I spent a great deal of time in Ghana over the years, and when people see me, Africans will argue with me about whether I'm black.
Right.
Okay? And that's because they don't have the cultural and historical intelligence to, you know, because, you know, I always say when I look into the mirror each morning, I know my history.
Right.
Because the reflection, the image in the mirror speaks to my history. And I'm wondering if he just simply doesn't have the cultural, historical intelligence balanced in a way to understand how very insulting that was.
I really don't think he knew that. And to be honest, you and I and others caught that. If some people that probably went over their heads, they didn't even see it as such. And, you know, I don't know whether that's good or a plus or a minus to their intelligence. Alpha, were you offended?
Like I said, this is the first time I heard it, and I heard someone speak of it, and when I heard someone mention it, that this is what he said, you know, until, you know, I thought about it, and no, I wouldn't have used that word, and I understand that people would be offended, but when people are offended, okay, everyone has that threshold. And he clearly crossed that threshold with a lot of people. But that's how it fazed me. Janice has always been someone very in touch with that particular narrative, I won't dare say she's oversensitive, because she's not. She understands to a greater extent of what has been perpetrated on we as a people.
Right.
And therefore, she has the experiences. She has, first-hand experiences. And when he used that term, she was more offended than some idiot like me. And I say that.
You are far from an idiot.
And I say I was not offended.
Janice, don't argue with him. Go ahead, Alpha.
That's just old Henry's way of getting back at me for his unemployment status. I understand. But like I said,
I'm feeling kind of Man of Steel-ish right now. I'll just leave it at that.
I was not offended. And I know that, when someone told me that that's what he said, the first thing I thought to myself, that's not going to go over well.
I
wasn't offended.
Right. I think that's what went through my head.
You understood instinctively.
When I heard it, maybe nobody heard that but me. Maybe everybody.
But see, you knew instinctively, and we have to be able to think, why would you know it and the president of the United States, who spent many years as a community organizer in a very large black community, would not know it?
Because.
And you know what? I'm going to say this, too. I wonder, and I know she's very intelligent. I bet his wife got on his case about that.
You know, I was thinking the same thing, O. Henry, that Michelle Obama must have been stunned. Because essentially, if he calls himself a mutt, then his children must be mutts too.
Right, but she probably said something to him, and I could see his mother-in-law saying something to him too. Part of what President Obama is missing, and one reason why he's missing, is because he allows people to run them away. People in his ear, like a Van Jones. Even Ms. Sherrod, Ms. Sherrod wasn't close to him per se. He's missing that. And even President Clinton had Vernon Jordan around him.
Yeah. And the thing is that Clinton wouldn't even have gone close to such a comment.
Oh, no. He wouldn't have done that. But
no. He wouldn't have even gone close.
The crazy thing is, if President Bush had done that, we would have chalked that up to his idiocy.
Obama
is and has to be smarter than that. Even though, he didn't mean any harm by it, it's what people will take and run with. He will offend maybe some of his supporters, but even his detractors will take that, and they'll use that against him and everyone else, The word means something else to them. He mentioned how even whites in America have that in their background in this country as well. Yeah, but you got to understand, to them, white is one thing and African-American is another. Regardless of what their situation is, they can always ride that white thing to the end. If they're poor and white and don't have a pot to piss in, they will still go into that voting booth and push that love for someone who doesn't have any of their best interest at heart or anything, simply because in their minds, they're better than us, regardless of what their situation is. That's the mindset of this country. And that's why we see this narrative being pushed right now that President Obama is a racist. He's dealing with racists, and their goal is to get white people back.
Well,
all the things that they've done.
It's like I always tell people when I have to go make when I do an awful lot of public speaking as a part of my job, and when I go talk to people and I start going off script, I have to put myself in check because I have no ability to be cute or to be funny.
Right.
Comedy is not my thing, and I can screw that up. So I just stay away from that stuff, and I think that he was trying to make a quirk, and it certainly didn't work, but it certainly reveals, O. Henry, to me, some of his deeper ingrained kind of thinking, which may be the impediment as to why he can't think through his role in the national discourse on race.
Well, Janice, one of the things that I've heard here was his experience in Chicago here. Barack Obama's experience in Chicago here with the largely African-American community does not qualify him to have that black experience because he was never in that, I would say, in that social group, in that vein. He never struggled. He never had that not have,
but he
don't
worked,
have.
How can you be an organizer in a black community and not understand the historical and cultural context in which the people live, have survived, and journeyed? That's
because,
my question.
Because his experience in the black community at large was simply to help the people navigate their way through their plight. And
well,
that's what he was doing.
He sure gave me a glimpse of where he is culturally, where his cultural intelligence or his lack of cultural intelligence was. And you know, maybe on this score, Henry, he should have given Jeremiah Wright or Shirley Sherrod a call.
they always run his people off who understand. One of the worst things Jeremiah Wright ever did in this country was to enlist in the military and fight for a country, and to use the term of Mr. Aguilson, show his love for a country that didn't love him as much at the time. And to speak from his experiences as a black man in this country in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And a lot of whites want to pretend that never happened.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now is the time to get over it. Shirley
Sherrod
is still waiting for justice from her father being murdered by a police officer. And last week I read of some right-wing nut who's parsing her words. Well, he wasn't actually lynched because it wasn't a mob and he wasn't hanged.
Yeah,
he's
yeah,
picking that up.
Yeah.
He was lynched in that he was murdered by a police officer. A white grand jury refused to indict him in spite of eyewitnesses to the situation. One of the problems that police officer had with him was that he was exercising his Second Amendment right to carry a firearm, something that many Americans, white and black, hold. They vote on that issue. They determine whether or not someone is fit to be in Washington or a Supreme Court justice based on whether or not they support the Second Amendment strongly enough. But this man was killed.
Yeah.
And they want to pretend it never happened.
Hey, O. Henry, can you hold over on till after this break, because we're going to switch gears here. We've got 20, we're going into the last leg of the show, and I do want to talk about Shirley Sherrod and the Sherrod effect. And I've been wanting to talk to you because I know that you understand and have some insight and experience as to what happened. You're listening to Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio, our call-in number. If you'd like to join us in our discussions, 347-838-9852. That's how you get to Saturday night, Open Mic. I'm Janice Graham. We'll be right back because we want to hear from you.
Oh, those boys are much too much. Those boys are much too much. We got the spirit. We're hot. We can't be stopped. We got the spirit. We're hot. We can't be stopped. We're going to beat them and bust them. Beat them.
Smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life.
A little bit rowdy. R-O-W-D-Y.
Take time to be a dad today.
Oh, those boys are much too much. Those boys...
Welcome to TruthWorks at Blog Talk Radio.
People are afraid to stand up because they are convinced that they will be standing by themselves. But as Paul Wilson pointed out, you do not have to just stand by yourself.
They're shooting black folks in the back, cops shooting them. Shoot a 92-year-old grandmother, and y'all didn't get outraged. And if she had a grandchild over there, and that nigga would come home for the funeral, then come back.
Ways, essentially a nation of cowards.
Janice Graham, I hope that you will join us here at Blog Talk Radio with TruthWorks Network Radio, a Black Voice collaborative, speaking truth to power and ourselves.
You're listening to Our Common Ground.
And thank you for being with us. Hey, Alpho, can you say thank you for being with us? We've got all this.
I don't know if I'm really still with y'all. You know, it takes, I mean.
Hey, this is talk radio. You either have to jump in there or step aside.
Yeah, but when I get those, you know, the breaks, that close, I get clotheslined by the host. I just don't get it.
Well, we've got O'Henry on the line, and I want to ask O'Henry to stay with us for a minute because I want to talk about Shirley Sherrod. You know, the whole thing about Shirley Sherrod was political, O'Henry, but nobody's talking about how badly it was handled in the context of the the policies and, I mean, the notion that someone would call any employee, whether it's the federal government or the private sector, and say, pull over and blackberry us your resignation. And my question was, why did she do it? I would have said, hey, you got a bad connection. I can't hear you. I'll call you when I get in the office. And then there was a political thing. So let's take a look at someone who I really suspect who is a political prisoner, Mumia Jamal. And let's listen to what he had to say about the charade thing.
Selling out Shirley Charade, or the Beck Effect. For a woman who spent a lifetime in the civil rights movement and the struggle for the rights of rural farmers, the events of recent days may have taught her that the rights of federal workers don't count. Shirley Charade, a 61-year-old black grandmother and USDA official, was targeted by right-wingers bent on using brief snippets from her speech to prove she was racist. In a matter of hours, Mrs. Charade was suspended and then forced to hand in her resignation. Initially, government officials defended the firing as an example of zero tolerance for racism. This is more than ironic for an agency that not only tolerated it, but practiced it for generations, especially when it came to black farmers. It took videotapes of the full text of her speech to cause Agricultural Department officials to take a second look. But by that time, the damage was done. The first black director of the USDA's Rural Development Office in Georgia was axed with the acquiescence and approval of the nation's first black president. What Charade learned is that no one had her back. It was a powerful illustration of the Beck effect after Fox News commentator Glenn Beck, or the power of right-wing media to make the White House dance to their tune, or perhaps more accurately, hop to their bark. If this could happen to Charade, a former activist in the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, the daughter of an organizer killed by the Klan, a lifelong organizer for farmers' rights, a federal official with the Georgia USDA, well, what about you? What chance do you have? This is post-racialism. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
Well, Alpho and O'Henry, you know, that seems to be the best summary. But O'Henry, give me your take. Here is a, people don't really realize that a state director in a government agency is an official. That's, you know, that's about the top of the line unless you're going to Washington. And this woman was treated badly. You know, she was bullied by a crude bully, a abusive bully, a satellite bully, a BlackBerry bully, out of a federal government. This is not even an issue of bad management. This is an issue of just vile and ugly, mean management. What was your response? O'Henry, are you there?
I think
did
we
lose O'Henry?
I hope he's out with his resume. I think we've lost him.
But you know,
well, let me say this. This is the I would have to say this is the I told you so moment in with this president. I supported this president. I support this president. This goes directly to my position of him not fighting back. He is too worried. He is too afraid of his critics. And he has been in this White House 19 months. And when you say that we as a people don't have his back, I would beg to differ, because simply because we are not going to the streets. They'll go to the streets. Liberal progressives and black people will go to the streets for immigration reform and the Arizona law. But you won't see. You didn't see anyone stand with the NAACP. You NAACP was like the Jet and the Defender. They got out there late to defend or to project racism by the Tea Partiers. And when they did come out, you saw Operation Push, the Honorable Reverend Jesse Jackson. You saw Al Sharpton. You saw them all wither into the background. Why didn't they stand with the NAACP, regardless to how tardy they were with this, what is it, what did they call it, this, the revelation, not a revelation, this, that they had 72 other things that they, you know, that they came out with, but this one about the Tea Partiers, calling them out, and see, they didn't even call them out. They came with their hat in their hands and begged a bigot to denounce a racist, and it will never
happen. My question really is, and O. Henry's back with us, my question really is this. Who is this cook woman who got away with badgering a federal employee? Forget about...
Well, the cook, you know why the cook woman got away? Because Sherrod did let her get away. Sherrod let her get away. Like you said, when she got the second call, that's when she should have stopped answering the phone and told her she had a bad connection, kick rocks. But she didn't. And that is what the problem is.
Yeah. Oh, so, Henry, are you with us?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
We got you.
Okay. I'll have to work till Monday at 8, Alpha, so I'm not going anywhere.
You didn't hear that resume thing I said, did you?
Yes, I heard it, but no problem. It bugged me, too, that someone would badger her on the telephone, and the man she pulled over and resigned. Imagine that. I mean, there was no, when you get to where you can talk, you need to call in, and we need to discuss this. It was, you need to resign. The White House wants you to resign. And then nothing happens. These individuals, they offer her another job, which I don't think she should take it. You know, maybe that's easy for me to say. But I wonder why you would badger someone to the point that they had to pull over and blackberry a resignation in. Now, I wish you would have said, I'll do that when I stop. I can't do that right now. We just passed a law here in Georgia where it's against the law to drive and text. So she should have said, well, I'm on the move right now. I can't pull over. I can't text while I'm driving. So once I get home, I'll get back to you. But the fear of this being on Fox and this being on Beck, and Bill O'Reilly actually take the segment demanding her resignation, but, of course, by then she had resigned. But when you're right, you don't back now.
Thank you.
Not in a situation like that, because it was too much on the line. Her entire reputation was on the line. She's 61 years old. Her career, her life was on the line. Her lifetime of achievement were on the line at that time. And it simply took watching the entire tape. I think it was a 40-minute tape. So if you had 40 minutes, you could figure out, well, they're accusing her of something that's not true. Same way Van Jones was accused of some things that really were not true. And they should have backed him and said, later for you. Bush stayed with Rumsfeld for how many years before he finally let him ride off into the sunset? Gonzalez never left, as far as I'm concerned. And then, of course, he's, if you want to say, cleared his name now or whatever. I mean, the president has to fight for his people. I'm not putting this
But the fact of the matter that the president will back, nobody has said how illegal this, there is a term in human resource where you're putting an employee in a position where they have no other choice but to resign. it's considered termination. So essentially she was fired, and it was an illegal firing because the federal government, the OPM, the USDA has a policy as to how it is done. And I can't understand how this Undersecretary Cook continues to have her job, no matter who told her.
Or Ms. Sherrod should have her job.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't get the sense of that. And it was wrong. It really was. And they apologize and what have you. But, you know, if you don't put yourself in a position like that, you don't have to apologize.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. Oh, Henry, we really enjoyed having you with us tonight. We have missed you on Saturday night, and we think
every Saturday.
We think that Alpha needs.
Yes, you're right. I need to work on my attitude. Bye, then.
To put me in check. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Guys, enjoy the rest of the evening and the weekend, and we'll see you next week.
Okay.
Take care, Henry. Take care.
You know, but it goes to say that we get involved in issues, and you know, at the beginning of the of this program, we were talking about sharpening our consciousness, and the thing of it all is that we have to peel back the onion, Alpha. We can't just decide that, hey, you know. It is what Fox News or MSNBC or whoever tells us it is. It is something more to it, and we have got to stop being ashamed at the idea that we have some separate and unique and distinct interests in issues that other people don't have, because as long as we keep apologizing for being the victims of a system that has sold us lies for 300 years, we're always going to be in a position where we're not waking up. We're sleeping through the lies that are sold. And we are when we become active, we're buying into the lies. So, you know, we've got to be careful, and I guess that's my parting shot tonight. Alpha, thank you so much. I know I've been rough on you tonight.
No, don't I get a parting shot though?
What's your parting shot? You got 1 minute to make your pardon shot.
Oh, I don't even need
you talking to me?
You talking to me? You talking to me?
My 1 minute is this. The man needs to stop fearing his critics. We see the situation is what it is. He is not getting the surrogates. He is not getting the support from his so-called Democrats, not even the Black Caucus. None of the senators are before cameras. The House leader is not before the camera. Harry Reid, quiet Harry Reid, he's not before a camera, even though he's in a fight for his life with Sharon Engel as a Southern.
It all gets back to politics for you.
Thank you.
I'm trying to be cerebral tonight. Hey, Alpha, we got to go. We got to get out of here. Thank you, everyone, for being with us. Join us every Saturday night for Saturday Night Open Mike. I'm Janice Graham, and this is Our Common Ground.
This is Janice Graham. Thank you for spending the evening at Our Common Ground. Join us each Saturday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Here, open mic on Saturday night on Our Common Ground.
Alpha.
Yeah.
What am I listening to?
What you mean, what you listening to?
I heard your TV or something.
Oh, yeah, that's my television. I was watching the end of a movie.
How you watching a movie and being on the show?
Well, it's called multitasking.
Oh, I see. I see.
It's called multitasking. I mean, you know, and part of the, you know, I've seen the movie already, so I was really, while the show was running, I had to take the movie that I hadn't seen.
Oh,
and,
Lord have
mercy.
So what was going on?
No, I was, everybody's gone, but my son came and picked up everybody, all the kids. And
got the hell out of there, huh?
Yeah, for a few. And I said, well, you going to bring her back this evening? He was like, iffy. And I, you know, I'm so sick and tired of this iffy. You know, she's just, I've been under the impression that she's going to pick up her car. Her mother is going to return her car to her.
Uh-huh.
Now, my son, I don't think I'm going, they're supposed to be meeting halfway.
Uh-huh.
And the first thing I asked my granddaughter, well, what if your mother shows up and in violation of the no contact order? And she shows up when you are going up there to pick up this car. I said, I'm telling you right now that Mimi, which is my son's girlfriend, she's going to call the police on her because she's not supposed to be there. You were too timid. You were too afraid to do that. So are you going to pick up this car? I don't know. What the hell you mean you don't know? So my son said, well, we're not going to. He's not going to let her just simmer and stew for a while because we're not going to, you know, go get this car. Maybe sometime in the middle of next week, maybe sometime, you know, we're not going to, you know, we're not going to get the car. And I'm saying to myself, well, how much sense does that make? If the mom is trying to get this girl her car and she has no transportation here because she's not old enough to drive my vehicle. Under my insurance and whatnot, and which means now somebody has to come and get her and take her. You know, that's ridiculous. You know, if this is a situation that you need to solve, you need to remedy, you need to do something. But this bit about she needs no instruction manual came with this child. And yet you are not willing to take advice from people who have gone through with, you know, what you're
mm-hmm,
going through now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, just damn. We told you when you were here the first time, you had a car, you had your mother sending you money, you had some support. You go back to Iowa against everybody's advice, she takes your car. She assaults you. She takes your child like everybody told you she would. And now we've come full circle. Now you're back to listening to bullshit, and you basically sound like a battered woman. And, you know, I understand that's your mother, but A, your grandmother raised you while your mother wouldn't.
Yeah,
okay,
but,
so,
and she very well may be. Battering is battering, no matter who it comes from.
Well, you're right. You're absolutely right, but this is exactly how she's acting. And irregardless to the advice that you get, or irregardless to what you see with your own eyes, what you experience, you're still not going to take the advice of somebody who's trying to tell you, somebody who hasn't got a, you know, I ain't got no dog in this fight. The only dog I got in this fight is my granddaughter and my great-grandson.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to give you good advice, and you won't take it. Oh, well, I will still support you, but the shoulder that you run to cry on, or the shoulder, or the support that you seek is getting thin. Because the last thing I am is an enabler. And I won't, you know, you go back up, you go through the same situation, and you let her jump back into control. You see, she has this history with her mother. Her mother has, you know, she bought, when she was capable of buying her own car and was doing it and was working, her mother kind of sabotaged what she was doing before she had a child, and controlling her and using her assets for her own, you know, benefit. And I'm, you know, I'm like, well, that's how y'all stay up there, you know, bam. You know, that's how you grew up. I got nothing to do with that. You know, that doesn't touch me. You know, but, I mean, it's changed. The dynamics of the whole scenario has changed. So, I don't, you know, I just give the advice is all I can give you and some support. And that's what I do. But it's getting thin because you don't have to refuse to take my advice but a couple of times before I say, whoop, I'm out.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. It does get troubling.
Did you see where they got Maxine Waters under the gun now?
Yeah.
Now, all of them. I mean, how's this president? No wonder you haven't heard much from her. If she's involving, conflict of interest involving a bank.
Well, we knew about that. I talked about that during the TARP thing controversy. Because she was under the gun for that. It's nothing. It's a nothing.
But see, this is my point. If it's nothing, stand and fight, damn it. If it's nothing, stand and fight. And those who decry and speak about you violating ethics, bring it out. Call them out. Tell them to prove it. And tell them that there should be pushback to a point of charging them with racially motivated agenda. I am sick and tired of these people shrinking up into a shrinking violet and basically running and cowering from when you're right, just like Shirley Sherrod. I understand that, you know, if that's what they say you have to do, but if you ain't done a damn thing wrong, when do you stand and fight? When do you stand and fight? And had she stood and fought, had she not resigned, by the time she got there, they would have found out that they were wrong. And this agriculture, how this cook woman has her job, how this agriculture, Secretary of Agriculture, hasn't stepped down, I don't know. But if Barack Obama was willing to throw a Van Jones under the bus, that agriculture secretary should have been right under that damn bus along with Cook. She should have been under the damn bus right. If you're throwing people under the bus, throw people under the bus under the same terms.
Yeah.
And he didn't do that. He spared the white folks and threw the nigga under the bus. And I use that term lightly.
That's right. Now those criticisms of him, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm sitting up here watching Obsessed. And I ain't watching it but for one reason. You know, damn.
What? What is Obsessed? What is that?
Obsessed is a movie. It's on HBO now.
Uh-huh.
It's a movie, Obsessed. The guy who played on The Wire, who played Stringer.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. On the Wire.
Oh, yeah, I saw that movie with Beyonce.
Oh, yeah. That's the only reason I'm watching, because she's in the movie.
Every
movie she's in,
she sounds the same.
Okay, but I'm not listening to hear her sing. To me, she's just blinding beautiful. And she's not on the top of the list. I mean, I watch the movies that she's in. I've seen the movie Clueless over and over again. But I don't care what Stacey Dash is in. I'll be watching it.
Who is Stacey Dash? Who is that?
Stacey Dash is the girl in the movie Clueless.
What's Clueless about?
Clueless is with Alicia Silverstone, and they are.
I know them people. What's the movie about?
The what? Well, Google her. Google Stacey Dash.
But what is the movie Clueless about?
It's a high school scene. It's a high school setting, and it's just it's about high school nonsense. I couldn't tell you too much of what it's about a California girl.
Okay.
However they talk.
Mhm. I get you. Okay, Alpha. Well, I'm gonna go. I didn't eat dinner, and I was gonna go eat some dinner, but I think I won't eat dinner.
Suit yourself.
We were supposed to watch this movie, something about Paris, with John Travolta and that other man, some other man. But I'll bet you Stephen is downstairs watching it already. Joe. I guess I'll have to watch it by myself. I meant to mention today was my father's birthday.
Oh, was it?
I'm trying to figure out. I had made a note to play songs from my Dance with My Father again, but I forgot that. But it was a good show, you know. Beef it up a little bit.
Well, I did feel kind of picked on. I mean, it mongles and butts.
Yeah, he really pissed me off at that shit. It was stupid. And he should have known how stupid it was. Let me ask you a question. Smooth Operator is a woman, right?
No.
No.
Oh, okay.
Smooth Operator is a man, and YJ is top notch. You remember Top Notch?
Yeah.
Steins busted him out.
I thought they were saying that somebody else was top notch. I saw that they were.
YJ is top notch.
Why he changed his name? And that's why he's so top notch, was also always so in love with India.
I don't know nothing about that.
You know, cyclist and top notch.
Let me just say this. Manit. my favorite Porky Pig Express. You know, I don't know nothing about that. I used to tease India about her stilettos, and that was it. It took me about 2 or 3 weeks to that her voice stopped grating on me.
Well, okay. Well, I will talk to you tomorrow.
All right.
I am gonna go relax. I got tomorrow morning. I got to get up. A newspaper asked me to write an article. And I've been telling them it's almost there. And tomorrow morning by noontime, I got to have it done.
Oh, okay. What is the article about?
It's about the media.
Oh.
The black
need
media.
Help? You need help? How about the white media?
No, let's black talk media. About the black media.
The black media don't count.
Imagine for a minute if the Scott sisters had got the kind of publicity that Shirley Sherrod got.
Yeah. They can get that. If the black media, the black media is not helping.
No, that's what I'm talking about.
The black media is not helping at all.
Yep, nope. All they do is copy what the white media is doing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, your Roland Martins and the whole nine yards. Because I still haven't seen that dust up he had with Shirley Sherrod.
Oh, I got the, you can go to YouTube and pick it up.
Yeah. Okay.
As a matter of fact, I played it last week.
I didn't. You played part of it. I didn't get it all.
Yeah. I just threw that consciousness thing in because I think people, I don't know.
That went over their heads, Dennis. And when you started playing the guy, I was like, they ain't going to get it. They ain't gonna get it. They ain't gonna get that.
Yeah.
It's lost in translation.
Yeah.
Because not only was he rambling, but he was rambling for a long time. People in our chat room have short attention span theaters running through
true.
Their head.
That's true. Okay, I will talk to you later.
All right, Dennis. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right now. Bye-bye.